Good morning to all of y'all. Good night.
Hi.
Okay. Am I? Okay, even closer. Sorry. Mike, I'm sorry.
Ah, now
I'm,
there we go.
I don't hear either. My name is Paul Toppins. I'm a lawyer interested in intellectual property issues and spoke last time about WikiLeaks at DragonCon, last DragonCon. And this is, I'll let him introduce himself.
Yeah. I'm James Smith. I'm an instructor of information systems at Georgia Southern University and dare say almost a professional WikiLeaks watcher in the sense I got paid for it. Last year I got to lead a group of senior security students through a semester-long case study over WikiLeaks, and got to learn more about Julian Assange than I ever really wanted to. But
I guess maybe just start off with just a real quick update on what this is all about, in case there's some folks who aren't familiar. WikiLeaks is a site that was started about 5 years ago. In which the principal player apparently is a guy named Julian Assange, who's this very strange Australian who had a very nomadic life as a kid. His mother moved him around a lot to avoid her ex in a custody battle. He started off as a hacker, which really gets him all upset nowadays, but as a hacker in Australia, breaking into sites. But supposedly he had an ethical code, he was a morally ethical hacker, and he wouldn't change anything on the site other than to cover the logs, to cover the tracks, what he'd done. But he just basically would go get information and see what was there. He got arrested at some point and was pled guilty to a few charges in Australia as a minor, I believe, and had to pay a $2,500 fine. He went on to do some other things, work for some corporations, and then it's like I said, about 5 years ago, emerged as a leader of a group of folks whose goal was to serve as an intermediary between people who had information they wanted to provide to the world, primarily about governments, but also about private individuals too, and companies, corporations. And presidential candidates, vice presidential candidates, an intermediary between them and actually releasing it. So there's sort of a buffer, a safe zone. They got initial publicity for releasing things like the Scientology books that you can't see unless you're Tom Cruise. Sarah Palin's
email.
Yahoo email yeah. account. You can't imagine Sarah Palin on Yahoo. The group Anonymous, which you many of you I know have heard of. I beg your pardon?
Illegal Yahoo email account.
Well, because if she did government business, she probably shouldn't have. Yes. She used for an illegal purpose, perhaps, if she under Alaskan law.
Also, they got started pretty early on. One of the people that was involved with WikiLeaks early on ran a node on the Tor network, and they got a lot of their early inventory just watching the traffic going across it, basically piggybacking on some Chinese hackers who were grabbing stuff, and they would just, you know, keep a copy and throw it up on WikiLeaks. It let them drive their document count up high early.
But more recently, they have become widely known for a couple of things. One is what they labeled as collateral murder, which was a video they obtained of American pilots in an Apache helicopter machine gunning, and maybe shooting a rocket too, of in Baghdad, some Iranian Iraqi. Beg your pardon, Iraqi terrorists, although it turns out that two of the people that they shot were Reuters news photographers, and the things that they thought were rocket propelled grenades or missile launcher were actually the camera equipment that the reporters were carrying. Anyway, they have the video, the audio. They posted it, I think, under collateralmurder.org. Yeah. It's very disturbing footage to see.
Yeah, it's interesting. There's a New Yorker article that follows the production of it. There was a reporter that was in Iceland with them as they were producing this. It was a major turn for WikiLeaks in the sense that this is the first moment you can see that they really stop. And I'm not. I think it's fair to say it's not even really a criticism. This is really the point where they stop being just a neutral broker of stuff and become an organization trying to change public opinion about an idea. Because if you read the article and follow it carefully, the collateral murder video was very well produced. They took a lot of great pains to shape the narration, the title, everything to basically give a message. When we were doing the case study with the students, I made them watch both versions, the unedited version and the edited version. And a lot of the things that you see very clearly on the edited version, a lot of it's because they're telling you what to see. If you just look at the raw footage, you're not really sure what you're looking at. So this was a moment in time where they stopped being kind of a neutral arbiter of facts and become folks with trying to promote a particular agenda.
I think it's fair to say that that's correct. I don't have a lot of problems with the editing of the collateral murder film, if only because I accept the fact that there are collateral incidents, and that in the heat of war, I think the pilots, I think, were sincere. They really thought that these people were folks that might shoot a rocket at them any minute. I think that, to me, I look at the broader picture, just shows how dangerous those sorts of situations are, and the damages that we tend to minimize, the public tends to minimize, because we don't think about the people who are killed by, you know, unintended consequences, or people who are killed and aren't combatants, or killed by friendly fire. You know, that's always a big deal. The military doesn't like you to know. The governments don't like you to know that a lot of the people, you know, some high percentage of soldiers who get killed, they're killed by other soldiers from the same side. But that's inevitable. That's just the way it is in modern war. So, I mean, that I just sort of shrug my shoulders at that. But WikiLeaks, does WikiLeaks have an agenda? I think they've got an agenda. But I think their agenda is a little bit of some degree of anarchy. Because I don't think that I think if they got something really good that drove one direction, and it wasn't necessarily the direction, say, that some of the releases of Guantanamo or the others have done, they would still release it just for the heck of it.
Possibly. I mean, I on top of the editing of the video, I mean, there was a TED Talk interview with Julian Assange right about the time of that release of that video. There's one phrase he uses, and he says, and I'm trying to directly quote it, "Our purpose is to change the mind of the people paying the bills," by which he means the U.S. taxpayer and the U.S. voter.
And I think Julian Assange probably feels that way, too. I look upon him more as a narcissist. He's interested in getting attention. He's interested in being the focus of attention. You know, my dime store psychology. And so I could see him doing something that would get him a lot of attention, but wouldn't necessarily follow in line with some of the ideological designs of some of the things they've released. But in any event, the more recent things that WikiLeaks has done, beyond the video of the shooting from the Apache helicopter, are a bunch of information from the State Department cables. The more recent things, the things that WikiLeaks has really gotten press on and has really had an impact with, or things have happened as a result of, basically come from, we suspect, or is alleged, come from information obtained by one guy, a PFC, Bradley Manning, who was worked in Iraq and had access to, worked in an intelligence unit, had access to material. The part that interested me was how he stole it. His computer had a CD writer on it, and he would bring in a CD, a readable, writable CD that he would pretend at least he was listening to, that had music on it. Lady Gaga was the one that made the press, at least. But it didn't have music on it, or he wasn't listening to it. He was instead writing to it. And he copied all the files onto the CD. He gave it to Julian Assange. And then he bragged to some hacker who he'd never met, just bragged online that he was the one that was behind it. The guy, a former hacker, I guess, turned him into the military, to the State
FBI.
Department.
And
the FBI, excuse
yeah.
me.
He was an FBI informant.
And they got Bradley. James knows more about him, I think, because
if you look at Bradley Manning as a case study, you've got a gentleman with top secret SCI clearance who had already been demoted from specialist back to PFC, and had a published record of some mental illness issues. I'm going to say this without having an opinion on the don't ask, don't tell policy, but he was openly violating the don't ask, don't tell policy while that was still in force, yet they would not remove his security clearance. Partially, I think this looks at the system of security clearance in the military. There were concerns that the cost and the effort to get someone else cleared, it wasn't worth removing him from duty at the time, that's a logical failure right there. Since his arrest, there's been a large grassroots group that's come up trying to make the moral case that he should be released. No one's really making the case that he didn't do it. You don't see many of his supporters out there saying he's not guilty, he was framed. Everybody tacitly accepts that he was the source of these leaks, but that he should be released on some moral grounds.
He was held in solitary confinement for months and months and months, an ungodly period of time. And apparently, I have not been to prison and hope never to go to prison, but solitary, it really is tough to have no human interaction, or very little human interaction. It's almost an enhanced interrogation technique. And the enough press and publicity and Amnesty International and others complaining about it got him moved to the general population of Leavenworth.
He was moved from Quantico to Fort Leavenworth, where he's in medium security and allowed to interact with other pretrial detainees.
We both talked a little bit before the session began. He's going to be in prison the rest of his life. I don't see any way around that. You mentioned Jonathan Pollard, who was spying for Israel and caught in the Carter administration, the Nixon administration?
It was a while ago. It was Carter, and he is still in jail. I mean, you look at Israel, one of our allies, we negotiate with them. I mean, they've been trying to tack his release onto everything since the peace talks during the Clinton administration. I mean, they really want him let out, and we in the U.S. is not letting go of him until his sentence is up. I don't see that they're going to treat Bradley Manning any differently.
Yeah, Pollard gave information to Israel. The flip side, and his detractors say, well, he also offered to sell it other places too, ended up giving it to Israel, but he wasn't as pure as the Israelis are painting him. But in any event, he did provide information on our security, on things to an ally, a good ally. There's no political drive to have him released from Democrats or Republicans. So I think Bradley Manning's goose is probably cooked.
Yes, he will get a trial.
Yeah.
It's going to take a while. I'm sorry.
Question.
The question was, is he going to get a trial? And the answer is, yes, he will in some course of time. I mean, technically, he's a pretrial detainee at this point, and has pled not guilty, I believe.
Yeah.
At an arraignment, so there will be a trial at some point, and there's a question right up there.
And it'll probably be a military tribunal of some sort, since he was in the military.
I would suspect that it would be. I'm not a military lawyer, but I would suspect that because he was in the military when this occurred, and because they have greater control, over military trials than they do over civil cases, criminal cases.
I'm not a lawyer, but I mean, just I know some folks that deal in military justice. There's no reason that it shouldn't be. I can't think of a reason why it shouldn't be a court-martial.
You know, and Bradley Manning is kind of a, you know, he's just sort of a doofus. He's not really, he's not sinister. He's, or if he's sinister, then he's a real strange kind of sinister. but, yeah. You know, I just kind of feel sick for the guy. He from what I've read, he was real, real unhappy being in Iraq. He was gay. He felt, you know, that added to it, you know, being out of place, being out of uncomfortable. And he just always was sort of a goof.
Oh, hang on. I think they want to get you the microphone. Yeah. It's for the recording.
Well, there have been some suggestions that actually he's transgender. And, well,
entirely possible.
Yeah.
I mean, the comment I made
in
earlier...
In which case, you know, there's not a lot of case law there for don't ask, don't tell, and there never will be because it's being repealed, but...
Well, when I mentioned the violation of don't ask, don't tell earlier, it was more in the sense that while he was still on duty and had security clearance and was the subject of disciplinary actions for other things at the time, there were statements on his Facebook page that, on the face of it, would seem to violate that policy that was in effect at the time. And it was more just a comment of, you know, if those are the rules, I'm not saying it's a good rule, why was he allowed to keep top secret, secure, compartmentalized information clearance while violating regulations?
In hindsight, looking at Bradley Manning, you'd go, how could anybody give this guy access to anything that was sensitive at all? That's the hindsight view, but, you know, we have that a lot.
We got one.
Yeah, well, got two.
Sure.
We'll get you next. Sorry, sir. Yeah, okay.
Bradley Manning, from my understanding, is not the only whistleblower. I mean, he may be produced the largest body, right? Single body, but
right.
There must have been a bunch of other whistleblowers of different sorts. And actually, I was wondering how Bradley Manning's capture, and I don't know, maybe others that maybe we don't know about, I don't know. How do you think they affect actually how other people, you know, look at WikiLeaks and Julian Assange? You know, it's kind of there are a bunch of issues here, right?
There are other people who've leaked information to WikiLeaks and leak it to other organizations. Do you mean how do people who might leak information view it, or how does the public view it?
Potential whistleblowers.
Potential, yeah.
They look at Bradley Manning, and you know, to them he's a lost cause, really.
I think there's a. It's like in my mind, it's like people who commit crimes, and you look at it and you go, what were they thinking? Don't they read the news? Haven't they seen what happens to people in similar circumstances? I don't know that it's a deterrent.
Except that there's a moral high ground here, you know? I mean, that's the idea.
Yeah. Matt, if I hit the
spot. Go ahead.
I mean, two parts to your question. First, the stuff that's been embarrassing to the U.S. military, the collateral murder videos, the Afghan war diaries, and the State Department cables, those are generally accepted right now to be the product of Bradley Manning's leak.
Really? All three of them?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, that's the scope of this. As far as how people view WikiLeaks, I mean, it's important to note their internal security about protecting their sources did not fail in this case. He allegedly confessed to someone. WikiLeaks didn't fail him necessarily in this regard. I mean... They have flat up said they cannot, they don't know if he was the source because it was an anonymous submission. Mm-hmm. At least that's the story they're going with, and no one's been able to prove otherwise. So, they held their end of the bargain on it.
Okay.
But will there be other leakers yet? There are always going to be. There are people that just they aren't thinking about what am I. They don't weigh the odds. How likely am I to be caught and get in trouble for this if I supply this information?
We got one more back here first.
Can you kind of outline existing and evolving law and practice with regards to the theft and then, of course, the posting of this kind of data in the U.S. and internationally?
U.S. and international.
Well, I mean,
okay.
Kind of
yeah. No.
Here,
yeah.
Of course, so.
Right. What laws did Bradley Manning violate? I mean, there are espionage laws. There are all sorts of criminal statutes about the release of information, government information, without authority. The purpose of WikiLeaks has been to be the way to take this illegally obtained material and wash it, you know, cleanse it, so that it can be released. Last year, I talked a lot about the Pentagon Papers with Daniel Ellsberg, and the issue for the New York Times and the papers that actually published the Washington Post that published these information about the Vietnam War by the Rand Corporation and others. Had they committed a crime by releasing it? And basically, the Supreme Court said no, because there's a First Amendment right. If they did not obtain it illegally, if they didn't say to Daniel Ellsberg, would you make copies of all these things that are coming through your office and bring them to us? If they didn't take that step, but they just were recipients of it, then they haven't committed a crime. And so that takes away the ability to prosecute WikiLeaks. We talked about this a little bit beforehand, too. The government would love to get Julian Assange and get WikiLeaks and find some kind of criminal action against him, but it's tough because of the First Amendment, among other things, to say what they've done wrong, law they have violated.
And beyond the First Amendment, I mean, Julian Assange is not a traitor. He's not a U.S. citizen. Most of these crimes did not occur within the jurisdiction of the United States. I mean, I think, you know, he's under house arrest in Britain right now, awaiting possible extradition back to, I think, Sweden. I think the main reason the U.S. hasn't asked for him for extradition is we don't have a bulletproof case against him. I think probably the dumbest thing legally he did was when they went to release the collateral murder video, he traveled to Washington, D.C. and had a press conference at the National Press Club and released the video. That, and even that might be, you know, excusable in the law, but that was probably the only thing that would attach any U.S. jurisdiction legally.
Any territoriality. But I think it's same as if publishing the New York Times, you know, just released it.
We got a few questions here. I know this gentleman and this gentleman were up, but
we can go ahead.
Make you walk more.
So what has happened with WikiLeaks? Like, at my company, they work for the State Department,
right.
So I'm obligated to not look up any information about this whatsoever.
Yeah.
Because if I do, I will be fired.
Yes.
To me, that is the stupidest thing I've ever heard. The government blocks WikiLeaks from access on any government computer. They have instructed all the government employees, you can't look at these documents. They've gone to schools that talk about them and say, look, if you go into case studies on WikiLeaks, by the way, you may take note of this, studies on WikiLeaks, your people won't be eligible for jobs at the State Department.
And I took this to my department when we did this project. The semester prior to that, I did have a soldier in my course, and I could not have done this. I would not have done this case study in the previous semester simply because I care about my students. But just to put a plug in for Georgia Southern, I went to my department and I said, I won't do this semester-long project if you tell me not to. And they went, do it.
Well, that's great. To me, it's crazy. It's out there.
Mm-hmm.
You think of all the people in the world who should know what its contents are people that might have occasion to deal with it. I don't understand that thinking. That is like if we pretend it isn't there, it'll go away. I don't understand that. I'm sorry. I mean, it prompted my response.
My bad.
Yeah.
Okay.
What's happened with it?
There's been a lot of fracturing. He lost his right-hand man, and I'm going to go to my notes here because we've been trying to figure out how to pronounce it for a while. Daniel Domscheitberg was pretty much his right-hand man and one of the heavy coders in terms of developing the secure submission system and everything. They had a spat. And they broke up, and Mr. Domscheitberg went and formed OpenLeaks and took a copy of everything. That actually goes into some of the stuff that's happened in the last week on this. The Guardian is a British newspaper. It was one of the four or five newspapers that partnered with WikiLeaks to responsibly release the State Department cables.
Just a side note, The Guardian is the one who's been giving Rupert Murdoch hell for his what they've been doing. They're big Murdoch, anti-Murdoch folks.
Yeah. But the reporter, David Lee, who was the point man at The Guardian, wrote a book and published it about this whole thing. And at one point during all of this, he basically goes to Julian Assange and says, put up or shut up. I want to see all the cables and no more of this dribbling it out. If you want us to provide you this value, you're going to show me all the cables. And so Julian Assange takes the entire cable file with all the diplomatic cables, unredacted, compresses them and puts them in an encrypted GPG file, password-protected one, and puts it on the WikiLeaks website and says, go home, download this file, here's the password, and go ahead and download the file fast because we're not going to leave it up there long. So he goes home, downloads it, and de-encrypts it, has to call him back because he didn't know how to decompress it afterwards, has to figure out how to use zip file. that's in the book. But at that point, he thinks that was a throwaway file. It's done. Well, right about that time, two things happen. One, Dimschmidt-Berg leaves and takes a copy of everything on the site with him, including that temporary throwaway file. Also at that point, that's right after the cables start coming out, and Amazon shuts them down, some of the domain registrars go after them, PayPal goes after them. A lot of well-meaning people all over the internet start archiving this site because, oh my gosh, the U.S. government's going to get it, kill it all. So, yes. Now this encrypted file is everywhere in all of these archives. Well, David Lee doesn't know this. The journalist doesn't know this. So when he writes his book, in the narrative about this, he includes the password. And last week, someone finally puts two and two together, finds this GPG file. It was a symmetrically encrypted GPG file, so it was simply password encrypted, gives it the password, decrypts the file, decompresses it, and has all of the unredacted cables. And as of about 4 days ago, they are all in the wild.
Well, it's good and bad. I mean, WikiLeaks was saying, we're responsible, we're going to, the criticism they got was, you've put lives at risk, say, people who were cooperating with the Afghan government or cooperating with us in trying to locate terrorists or Al-Qaeda, what have you. Their names are in these things. And so WikiLeaks, well, first they said to the State Department and others, we'll give you the file. Would you redact the information you don't think should be in there? And we'll decide if we agree with your redacting. And the State Department says, hell no, we're not touching it.
Yeah.
Well, so they started redacting, to some degree. And they don't get everything. There have been things they've released that have had unredacted names. But basically, if you've been in communication and worked with the provisional government or been communicated with the State Department memo, communicated with the State Department, or they've written something about you, you didn't know they'd put it in writing, mm-hmm. Your name may be out there. You know, it may list people who are friendlies to the government here, at least, and whose lives are rich. Well, anyway, that all goes out the window. Unredacted, their names are out there for the world to see.
I want to hit one more part of his question
quick.
I think WikiLeaks itself is being marginalized. I think Julian Assange is being marginalized. I mean, he's under house arrest in Britain right now.
Yeah.
It is fair to assume he has a fair amount of signal intelligence watching whatever comes in or out of where he's at. I don't think anyone in their right mind would leak something to him right now. And you've got these other sites, OpenLeaks, Cryptomy, others that, the people who never got the press, but they're out there now. I think it won't so much be the future of WikiLeaks, it'll be the future of the leak movement. So does that get you where you need to be on your question? Okay.
Well, WikiLeaks does say they have other things coming. Presumably Bank of America files to show how they've, everything's rotten in the banking system. Who would have guessed?
Dimschmidt-Berg, there was a report that Dimschmidt-Berg destroyed that on his way out the door.
Oh,
that's why
okay.
They haven't been released.
Okay.
Yeah. I think we got a question in the far back. He's had his hand up for a while.
Well, thank you, gentlemen, for holding court on this very interesting topic. Obviously, the U.S. government has a lot to, or State Department has a lot to lose with the release of these cables. But one aspect that I think is a little bit less polemic, and perhaps, James, this has come up in your class with your students, but of course the State Department monitors civil rights issues around the world, or human rights, I should say. And annually, the State Department releases a Human Rights Watch report, not Human Rights Watch, but a human rights report, and political officers at our embassies and consulates around the world monitor human rights issues. They talk to people who are in opposition to the governments in power, in China and Burma and all these places. And now with these unreleased cable or unscrubbed cables being released, these people's lives are at risk now. And I think that's something that a lot of the public isn't really aware of. I mean, I'm curious what kind of ethical discussions have gone on in your class, over that aspect.
Well, I think the general consensus that we came to with my students, or that the students came to, I tried to let them steer it in a lot of ways. Was that especially the stuff that wasn't necessarily about our wars right now, the stuff that is, some guy at the consulate in China talked to this guy. I mean, these cables are the unvarnished internal email of the State Department. They contain strong opinions, bits of information that people don't even know they gave to the U.S. government in some cases. Hi, I was having lunch with this guy from this other embassy, and he told me this, and it might be important. It's kind of a catch-all sieve for global information gathering. Yeah, there's going to be fallout from it. I mean, that's reality.
And the cables, they weren't top secret, I don't believe. They were just confidential secret. Or secret.
I thought they were secret and below,
yeah.
Is my understanding.
They're just normal State Department traffic that all sorts of people in the State Department get and can see. My concern, if I was worried about it, might be an appear in them, was that this is somebody else saying something about what I might have said. And knowing how oftentimes people get that wrong or they have different perspectives, I could see some guy being really surprised that they're listed as an opponent of some, dictator in some country, and oh my God, I better get out of the country quick. One thing though that WikiLeaks has been credited with, and we'll continue just for a second, been credited with as release of some of these State Department cables is a piece of the inspiration for the Arab Spring. There were cables that have gone back. Amnesty International, in their 2010 report, listed WikiLeaks and praised them for being part of the Tunisia revolt, because there were these cables that went back and forth between, and I can't remember the man's name, who was president or whatever of Tunisia, the State Department, where he was agreeing to do certain things, and there have been other cables from other Arab countries where they show they're working with the U.S. more than they let on, which have been received poorly back home. And that was just one little piece of tinder to the fire that helped, at least in some people's view, it helped start everybody getting upset. So, I mean, there have certainly been results from what they've done, for good or for ill.
Yeah, I think it's more of a magnitude of the fallout. There's going to be very, very good fallout and very, very bad fallout. I don't think there's going to be mediocre fallout from it.
Yeah, Sarah Palin won't be using Yahoo accounts anymore.
Yeah.
That's the mediocre.
How have the groups like Anonymous, I don't want to talk about Anonymous, but how have the groups like Anonymous that have attacked the, like Amazon and PayPal,
Operation Avengers on.
Yes. How has that affected the legal implications of the WikiLeaks situation?
I don't think it's affected the WikiLeaks. Well, to give you a little background, when WikiLeaks began to get all this notoriety for all these U.S. government documents they were releasing, this information they were releasing, all of a sudden the established parties that WikiLeaks used to help it, MasterCard, Visa, PayPal, they had Amazon, they had some of their servers they were using, because Amazon does a lot of business as a server farm for different groups, other than just selling their books and things. They began to back out and say, oh, well, WikiLeaks violated the terms of service. One of the ones I think I read was MasterCard said, Julian Assange and WikiLeaks He didn't list his home address properly, so that's why we're kicking him out.
Well, there was a French or Swiss bank that froze about 31,000 euro of his money over not having a false address on the account.
And he said, I can't have an address. I move every night, you know, because I'm targeted. Well, so anyway, they did that. They began to pull back, and then the groups like Anonymous and Anonymous began to do denial of service attacks against these guys to sort of punish them. And they also did, what was it? They went in and got some, Bank of America. When Bank of America hired a big time law firm and a tech support company and
DG,
all sorts of things to help them in dealing with the fallout of what they expected to be this release, Anonymous went in and got the memos from the law firm or the tech company and published those.
Yep.
You know, which basically that they were saying things like they were making plans to do things illegally.
Yeah.
To
they were talking about how they were going
to
crush Anonymous and WikiLeaks, and it was it's funny. Once they, you know, post all of that, Anonymous posts all of that. I don't think anything good comes from the denial of service. I'll say this one.
Yeah.
All right, that WikiLeaks set up relationships with all these companies. And yeah, all these companies dumped them because, frankly, probably because the U.S. government tapped them on the shoulder and said this would be a good idea. they have stockholders they got to look out for. I understand that. The problem with them getting hacked afterwards, DOSed afterwards, is are they going to want to stick their neck out for the next controversial idea that comes up?
No.
I mean, they're just going to preemptively not do business with them. I think that has a chilling effect.
Yeah, I think it definitely does, too. I'm not too happy with them cutting off WikiLeaks from getting donations because of bogus things like a...
Money laundering.
Yeah, well, not money laundering, but the, your address was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
That just has a bad smell to it. I mean, they should all just say, you're too controversial. Let them just be upfront about it. I think they'd be better served, and I would think they would draw less attacks, frankly. But
yeah, question back here, I think.
As a Guardian reader, a steady Guardian reader, I'm probably coming at this from a rather different angle.
Okay.
But perhaps WikiLeaks wouldn't have had the impact that it had if it hadn't shown that our governments were lying to us. For example, we found out that the British, who had denied it, were giving assistance in extraordinary rendition, which is sending detainees to other countries which permit torture so that they could get information out of them that way.
Right.
That's right.
And if these things had not been lied to us in the same way, I don't think it would have had the same impression. We had a case back in the Argentine War when a senior civil servant leaked information, again, that the government had lied over which direction the General Belgrano was going in. He went up for a civil trial for breach of the Official Secrets Act. He was undoubtedly guilty from a legal standpoint, and the jury acquitted him. I think that if Bradley Manning were up for a civil prosecution rather than a military prosecution. He has no hope with military prosecution because there is no doubt that he's guilty under the terms.
And the jury is made up of military.
But
there is a moral question here.
Is there any history of jury nullification in a federal case? I mean, the federal prosecutors, even the civil system, are very successful.
But jury nullification is where a jury basically decides we don't care if he's guilty or not. We're not going to convict the person. They decide, and the courts will instruct you. You can't do this, but the lawyers will kind of hint, yes, you can. And you know, it's all up to you. It's you're the ones that decide this case. It's up to you to decide what will happen. And it's called jury nullifications because they just nullify the whole process by saying, on some other reason, we're not going to follow what you tell us what the law is and whether this person violated the law. Yes, there's a jury nullification in the federal court? Sure. I think there's jury nullification anytime you have a jury.
Is that valid under UCMJ?
I don't know. You're talking about a military court doing a jury nullification. I don't think there's as much chance for jury nullification when you have career military officers who are the ones that are the jury. I mean, they'll come back and, what happened to them? I mean, they're not free from reprisal.
They also pick the, if I'm not mistaken, the commanding officer picks the jury.
Yeah. Well, it's not a jury of your peers that you get to select. You're right, yeah.
In a court-martial, the commanding officer picks the jury, which means that in practice they'll pick people that are going to rule the way they want them to.
In Bradley Manning's case, there's no way in the world that you're going to find anybody who has any hope of a career in the military to I mean, there might be, a holdout juror, but mm-hmm. I don't know. Does it need to be unanimous?
I know that there will be officers and enlisted on his jury. That's the only thing I know.
The difference, ma'am, with the in this country, I don't feel like if Bradley Manning went before a federal criminal jury that it would be received the same way as the British official who went before a jury about the Falklands War. Because we don't pay that much attention to stuff that's going on, and the jury that's going to be picked, I don't have that much confidence in getting a politically charged jury that would feel like, well, this was just wrong. You know, this
it's
person.
It's 12 people that couldn't get out of jury duty.
Yeah, yeah.
People that couldn't.
Yeah. So I think your system may be superior in that regard, or at least the size of Britain and United Kingdom and having you still have a vibrant newspaper industry. You people still read the newspaper. We don't read it that much anymore.
We got two questions, one here and one here. I don't know which one was first, so just pick one.
Sure.
Yeah that, right there.
You know, governments are kind of massive things. And I don't know, a little panic inspires the Patriot Act, do you think WikiLeaks has the potential to produce the opposite of the intended effect, which is, in other words, do you think WikiLeaks might create a situation where it might endanger more of our civil rights than...
Sure.
Do you see what I'm saying?
There is an argument, and I get angry emails from a friend of mine who is very upset at the Obama administration's position on whistleblowers. It's an underreported story, but apparently the Obama administration really has taken a firmer, harder line against whistleblowers than has the Bush administration. They have been cracking down. Just within the past few weeks, they finally either dropped the charges or reduced charges or dismissed charges against someone. And I apologize, I don't know all the details. I can't bring them to mind. But somebody that had disclosed something that when you hear what they disclosed, you thought, well, yeah, that makes sense. And, yeah, I guess, it wasn't really like it was a big secret, but they were prosecuting them for release of government information. So,
Thomas Drake?
I'm sorry?
Was it Thomas Drake, the Thomas Drake case that was going on for about 3 years?
I don't know the man's name. If you tell me what the facts were, I would might be. What did he talk about?
I can't remember. All I know is that when they came to a judge, they went and tossed it out and said, this is just ridiculous.
Well, the ones that I've seen, the government's position that they take is we can't discuss what they've done because it would require us to release sensitive information. They end up having to sometimes, drop the charges or reduce the charges because the defendant can't get access to what it is they're supposedly, to have leaked because it's top secret or it's, confidential.
Well, I mean, is it more important to lock the person up or keep the secret?
Keep the secret, right.
Going back to your question real quick, I don't think it's going to make a huge sea change difference simply because you got two parts of it. You got the WikiLeaks part, which I think highlights the openness of the Internet and the international nature of it. We don't have global laws. I mean, there's not really a control to be placed on that currently. But as far as the Bradley Manning side of it, I mean, there is law. He broke it. I mean, it's not, I don't think there's going to be any rash of new Patriot Act style laws or anything about it. There was a system failure in the way that the United States government picked people for TS classification.
There may not be international law, but there is American law that applies to Americans abroad as well. You know, I live in Israel a lot of the time, and different cultures and on security and subterfuge and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And I feel in Israel that things are changing because of this. I don't know. I guess it's
history will tell us. History will tell us when it gets here.
I think all history seems to be pendulum swings. You know, so I could see the Patriot Act is a pendulum swing one direction. The Alien and Sedition Act after the Revolution, was sort of, you would think, how could the people that wrote the Declaration of, the Bill of Rights come up with the Alien and Sedition Act? It just seems so contrary. But Thomas Jefferson, he used it. So we just go, back and forth. And I think we're unfortunately still over, I like to be living in the time where it's just swung through the middle, but we're living in one of the extremes.
I think the case that you may have been referring to was on 60 Minutes 2 weeks or so ago. It's about the fella who was involved with, he knew about the listening software and the NSA went and spent a lot of money on a different thing and he brought it up as a waste, that they spent all this money. And it's been in it's been involved for, I don't know, at least two or years or so, maybe. Well, actually, it goes all the way back to 9/11. It was after 9/11.
Yeah.
I think that's maybe the case that
it could
you
be.
Were thinking about. It was just recently republicized that the judge threw it out.
It could be, because what struck me when I read about it from my friend's angry emails was that that... What he talked about was either I thought, well, that's common knowledge. It isn't any big secret. If you read anything, you know about them. And he it was critical of something like the cost.
It was just
wasted money.
The differences.
Yeah.
The reporter who released the password for the State Department, did he open himself to liability or a legal risk there, in your opinion?
We don't know yet. I mean, this is hit in the last, or someone realized that was the real password in the last week or so. And, I mean, the reporter's in Britain, Julian Assange is in Britain. I don't know much about British law, but, I mean, I don't know. But, yeah, this is so new, no one really knows yet. Oh, one important thing to note, this file that was decrypted was not, there's been reports that this was the insurance file that was put out to protect Julian Assange. They put out a big encrypted document dump for anyone to download about a year or so ago. It was right before this panel last year. And basically said, if anything happens to Julian Assange, we're going to give you out the password to this. There's been reports that this was the insurance file. It was not the insurance file. Now, it's remarkably similar in size to the insurance file. And depending on they use different encryption methods and if they use different compression methods, it might materially contain the same information, but we still don't know. They have still got a dead man switch on this insurance file that a lot of people have it, and they're threatening to let go of the password if they feel significantly threatened. But this was not it. Yeah, basically.
So, of course, there are downsides to open information and all that, but one of the benefits to history, of course, is teaching people what actually goes on as opposed to what the government say goes on.
Yeah.
So are we aware of any academic institutions that have gained access to the WikiLeaks files and are going through them to develop coursework for future poli-sci students so that they go in with a much better understanding of what actually goes on?
Well, I think you're going to run into the problem of, one, now that the unredacted cables are out, there will be scholarly work done on it. I think there will be a little bit of a chilling effect due to the fact, I mean, like I said, when I went to do this course, I wouldn't have done it the semester earlier because I did have a member of the U.S. military in my course, and there are restrictions on him right now. So I'm not sure you're going to see anything in the next... I mean, history's a fickle thing. It never gets here when you want it to. I think over the long run there will be historical work done on it, but I don't think there's going to be a lot of current events work done on it in the academic environment.
And you run into the problem this gentleman talked about. You know, he works for somebody that has State mm-hmm. Department, you know, or government connections, and they're prohibited from looking at it. I could see an international affairs school just eating this stuff up. But they, who are they training their students to go out and work for a lot of times? State Department. I mean, that's a real, it's a stupid rule, but it's a real tricky thing for them. Do they ruin their students' job prospects or make their students into liars?
I'm not sure there's a heck of a lot of risk to students who are not currently employed or retained by the federal government under security clearance. I don't think there's any real danger to their future employment by the federal government over this.
Well, I do know that the government has gone to academicians and said, don't do it.
I think they've implied some things. Yeah. But, I mean, my biggest concern has been students who have active security clearances.
I saw on CNN last night, they were going through one of the Gaddafi locations, and the CNN guy had, look, we have all these cables. We're between the CIA and the intelligence services of Gaddafi's government, talking about extraordinary rendition and other things. I mean, they were working with, you know, now that we were all back being friends with Gaddafi a few years ago, you know, there are other sources of those documents than WikiLeaks. I guess maybe they could use some of those because they haven't been, you know, they've been obtained because we helped drive out the government. You know, it's the information's going to be out there. So I think people are going to at some point discuss it.
So the short answer here is that Julian Assange is currently in Britain in house arrest.
House arrest pending
WikiLeaks
possible extradition. Yes.
WikiLeaks is up or down?
It's up.
We've
Hadn't
got
done much
multitudes
recently.
Of other sites which are basically the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
No real legal action is being taken in America on these things.
Nope.
And
except against Bradley Manning.
Yeah.
Well, Bradley Manning's a separate topic.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry.
I think technically the hacker that turned in Bradley Manning showed up.
Adrian.
He showed up last year and he did a talk about it.
Oh, really?
And it's on the DragonCon website of the historical things. Like, this is being recorded, it's going to go on the DragonCon website. So.
Yeah.
But so I'm just trying to get an idea because we've covered a whole bunch of different topics.
I think you're just going to see, it's going to be one of those turning points in history where, you know, 50 years from now, there's not going to be a WikiLeaks. Yeah. There's going to be plenty of places you can go and get leaked information. They created a technology, not a brand. You know, I think, you know, the concept's out there and other people will use it, but I don't think WikiLeaks is an ongoing entity. I mean, one thing, if you look at the backstory of WikiLeaks, there's this claim that it was formed by a conglomerate of Chinese dissidents and dot-com money and other shadowy, there's this shadowy leadership cabal somewhere. If that's true, it's a great origin story. You know, and having worked with not-for-profits, I mean, they were using a lot of volunteer coding hours and all this stuff for WikiLeaks. If you want to inspire volunteers to give time and money, it was a great origin story for that. But if that leadership cabal exists, why didn't they reign, and they really care about just the open release of information, not grinding an axe at the U.S. government, why didn't they step in and rein in Julian Assange a year ago? Where are they? You know, I think WikiLeaks is probably a creation of Julian Assange, and I wouldn't leak anything to him right now if my life depended on it. Especially if my life depended on it.
Assange, just while he's walking over to give you the microphone, they had a hearing in mid-July. Well, the trial judge or whatever the judge is that hears the extradition request from Sweden to bring him over to Sweden for questioning on two sexual assault cases. And the sexual assaults, as I understand it, where he had consensual sex with the women involved, but then he had sex where he didn't use a condom and they wanted him to. I don't know. You know, that's the nature of the assault, as I understand it. I mean, you don't have all the pictures. But it's now gone before the next level court where they're challenging it. And I don't know what basis they have to challenge it. I suspect that ultimately he probably will be extradited.
I think the biggest problem is my current understanding of the extradition is he's not wanted for charge, he's wanted for questioning. And their argument, Assange's lawyer's argument, is, okay, that's great, I'll go to the Swedish embassy in London, and you can ask me all the questions you want. And so
I think he's not been charged. I mean, they did initially charge him, and then they withdrew it right away.
Yeah, but they kind of want him on a material witness, and they want to question him in Sweden.
And they said the procedure is we don't do an indictment in our charge until we do give, you know, talk to him, get a chance to have a question.
Hi. I wonder if you guys could put your futurist hat on for a second. I am probably a little less competent in technology than I used to be, but it feels like we're on the cusp of a different computing paradigm that, you know, takes us outside the web browser and sort of websites like WikiLeaks and OpenLeaks. What does the future of whistleblowing look like from your perspective?
From a technological point of view, I'd say that the sea change for whistleblowing is actually, you have to look back a few years for it. It's the creation of publicly available open sourced hard cryptography. PGP, GNU Privacy Guard, SSL to an extent. I mean, that changed everything. That I'm not going to say that the U.S. government with all of its resources can't break these, but it makes the, it puts them in a position currently where they have to decide how badly they want to. You know, they can't just read everything. So is that kind of get you where?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's kind of like, you know, you can never completely burglar-proof your house.
Sure.
But if you can make it as inconvenient as possible for the burglar to move on to the next easier
target.
Sure. And
if I can make my, you know, my diary encrypted so hard that it would cost the federal government $1 million worth of man hour and resources to read it, do they really care?
And there's so much data out there too. I mean, they have to. They no longer can monitor it without machines, without a program. They, you know, they have to have something that does it for them. And I'm sure they're doing that. And that, does that give them a better ability to find things? I don't. You know, probably better ability to do false leads too.
Sorry, I'm getting some feedback.
It's okay.
So I'm going to tack on to the technology point. What do you see about technologies like Tor, like the open hidden services, and like consensus protocols where you can have a service that literally could not be shut down?
You know, I think those are growth areas. I mean, and the reason I went back to publicly available hard cryptography was that's the foundation for all of that stuff right there. Everything since then, all that stuff's an outgrowth of it. I think the problem you have with Tor specifically is the limited number of nodes, out nodes on it, and who's watching them. I mean, WikiLeaks got its start by parking itself on a Tor node and looking for stuff. I think systems like that are very cool and are governed by the discipline of the people using them. I mean, I think we can look at this book and the release of the... There was nothing wrong with the encryption they used to encrypt that cable file. There was a failure of discipline on multiple points by the users. But to go more straight towards, I think, you know, dark nets are great. I think if you're a cause that is not necessarily popular right now, I think your ability to use it right now is limited by having people with expertise in it. I think for it to really make a change in the world, you're going to have darknet, for lack of a better word, services that are easy enough for your average non-techie activist to use. And I don't think we're there yet. Does that hit your question?
Every time I type in my PGP password, I think, you know, I'll bet you if I work for the NSA, they don't they care about encryption, and they want to crack it, and they want to figure out how to do that. But I'll bet you they're spending almost as much time in coming up with the perfect undetectable keystroke logger that can be loaded on every single computer in the country. There was the case of some guy that had a PGP file, a mafia type, and they were able to get into it because they had used a keystroke logger, and lo and behold, what was he using as his password? His federal prison ID number.
Also, we're seeing this right now. There was a Wall Street Journal article covering the revolution in Egypt. They got into the Egyptian intelligence service, started going through the files. Intelligence services are wonderful. They keep all these files, and then when the government goes down, you get to read them. And, you know, they had... used a computer worm to circumvent activists who were using Skype. Now, Skype's a fairly well-encrypted voice service. They weren't going after the encryption. They were putting a Trojan on the computer that was simply intercepting the microphone and the speaker and completely bypassing. They were catching intercepts of the Green Revolution guys bragging about how, oh, this is Skype, it's unbreakable. Yeah, they didn't have to break Skype. They just had to compromise your computer.
If I were the NSA, I use various VPNs when I'm places like this, and you're fire sheeping me. But I keep thinking when I log on to my VPN, I'm using Ninja VPN right now. I'm thinking, I bet the NSA runs this damn thing, you know? I bet that they're the ones that are providing it out here for a low cost. I mean, I would if I were them.
Oh, there's quite a few Tor nodes in the Maryland, Virginia, D.C. area. If you've ever looked at the map, there's a cluster of Tor nodes in that, you know, area around Maryland, Northern Virginia, and D.C. There's a lot of them.
There's also a hidden service.
There's also a hidden service that keeps a list of exit nodes to put on your exclusion list.
Fair enough, yeah.
Okay.
My question is, if you are someone that has information you want to get out there, are there places that you should avoid? Are there places that are things you should or shouldn't do, things you should look for before you do something like that? And one note that I don't think a lot of people in the state of Georgia are aware of, you do not have the First Amendment right to the freedom of speech when it comes to whistleblowing as of 2006.
Okay.
That was overturned by the Georgia Supreme Court.
I mean, for starters, you got to care enough to take the hit, take the consequences. Two, three people can keep a secret if you kill two of them. Don't get on a chat log one night and start yakking about what you did. I mean, that's pretty basic right there. I wouldn't use WikiLeaks, that's for dang sure.
Yeah.
But how would I leak something like that? I mean, it really depends on what it is and how. I mean, it's one of those things. There are secrets that they'll inconvenience you for if they find out you leak them. There are other ones they'll throw you in jail in a naked, in a cell naked under bad conditions for in a third world in a rendition country somewhere. I mean, it really depends. I mean, I wouldn't use WikiLeaks, obviously, but I mean, there are places to do it at, Cryptome, OpenLeaks, whatnot. I think the bigger question you want to look at is, how do I get the information to make a difference? Now, one thing I think WikiLeaks did right in this is, rather than just throw this stuff out there, they got into a symbiotic relationship with The Guardian, The Times, Der Spiegel, others, because, yeah, they used each other. You know, Guardian, the papers, all of them, they got to sell issues, and WikiLeaks got to get a microphone. You know, there's lots of stuff you could leak to Cryptome or whatever, and no one will just ever look at it. Yeah, I mean, the question is, what is the change you're trying to cause? And how do you get to the audience? I mean, Julian Assange said it right. Our objective is to change the mind of the people paying the bills. I mean, who are the people you're trying to change the minds of? And work from there.
Pentagon Papers sort of idea. Is that what you're referring to?
Yeah.
Well, I remember I was thinking this when we were thinking about the long-term effects of the history. You know, with WikiLeaks, with digital information, it's out there, boom, it's really out there. You know, if you can't, once it gets released to the net, in a very short order, it can be in a million different locations, so you can't get it back. Once it's there, it's there forever. I remember when the Pentagon Papers came out, I mean, it was a big deal, and the Nixon administration was attempting to stop the New York Times and the Washington Post from publishing it. And what they did was, I think they went to other newspapers when those two were under an injunction. They went to other newspapers to try to get it out there, because if it wasn't disseminated publicly. And then as soon as the Supreme Court ruled, both the New York Times and the Washington Post rushed out these little fat paperback books of the papers, you know, really overnight printing almost, when they didn't have the capability, or that was unusual, mm-hmm. just so there would be hundreds and thousands of copies of it out there.
So it could never be called back.
Never could be called back, right. And
it's easier now.
Now you just punch a button and bloop, there it is.
There was a bit more, actually somebody...
Hang on, let me get it.
Somebody actually read the Pentagon Papers or part of it, or ended up getting into the record as part of a filibuster against the draft.
Yeah, somebody read
and
it.
And it's in the Constitution that you cannot be prosecuted for testimony given before Congress.
But, well, they have the senators and members of the House have absolute immunity for whatever they say on the floor of the House and the Senate. So somebody got up and started reading the Pentagon Papers
as a protest.
I want to say like Mark Hatfield or somebody from Oregon.
And at that point...
I think it was Mike Gravel. Yeah.
Okay, Mike Gravel.
And also at that point, the congressional record can't be edited out. So at that point it was, if you don't want to get it from the New York Times or Washington Post, just go get a copy of the congressional record from that day.
It was effectively a de facto declassification.
Yes. Project.
Yes. Yeah. Right. Which Dick Cheney has the authority to do too. They just declassified all the Valerie Plame stuff. Yeah, thanks. Yeah. Yeah. Kills an hour.